Hey, Sam.
Hey, Paige.
What are we doing?
We are recording a motherfucking podcast.
What's this podcast called?
M-Cubed.
Murder, mystery, mayhem.
Dick fingers.
Sam, again, stop talking about Pina.
I can't. It's just a great topic of conversation around here, apparently.
Obviously.
Obviously. This is the second time we're going to try to record this episode.
And you added a whole lot more to it.
Yes. Yes, I did. It went from 6 pages of research to 9. Because I decided I was going to go do as much of a deep dive into each of the victims as I possibly could. And so it just turned into like a paragraph per person, and then it just went on from there. Yeah.
Yay!
So, buckle up.
Buttercup.
But before we get into the story, what do we have for new shit?
I don't know, because we just recorded like 2 days ago.
Yeah, we did.
So, I don't know that we have new shit.
Well, the last episode, we didn't talk about how our Instagram has grown.
It has grown.
That's pretty fucking awesome. We're just under 300 followers now, and it doesn't seem like a lot, but to us, it's a shit ton.
Yeah.
One follower is like, fuck yes.
Yeah. So we have made friends with a few other podcasts.
Yes.
And I'm trying to listen to a bunch of different ones.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, so we can shout out more people and stuff like that. It's taking me a minute, because there's a lot. There's a lot of podcasts out there. True crime.
This is true.
Yes.
But I have found a few of my favorites that I will listen to before I listen to my old favorites, like Morbid and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, like, anytime Live, Laugh, Murder drops an episode, I immediately download it and then listen to it.
And then I love True Crime Banter. They have a microdose out, I think, right now. So I gotta listen to that. I've started Crime de la Crime. I always get it backwards.
That's really awesome because she focuses on missing persons cases, and she does 2 of them each episode.
Yeah, her name is also Sam.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Hey, Sam.
talking to yourself again. Anyways.
That doesn't stop. It doesn't stop. But that's a really cool one.
True Crime B&B.
Yes.
Bailey and Beth.
Yeah.
They're awesome. Yeah.
They tell 2 stories in theirs too. Mm-hmm. One that's like not so great, and then one that has like a happy ending.
When she means not so great, she means like bad things happen.
Yeah.
Not that it's not a good story.
Oh, yeah. Don't take it that way. No, it's like a typical shit true crime story that we all have to binge because apparently we're all psychopaths as well. Mm-hmm. But then the second story they tell has the happier ending to it. Or as much as a happy ending can have with a true crime story.
Right. But yeah, and there's more too that I'm trying to listen to. Mm-hmm. It's just hard to keep them all separate. And I'm trying to listen to everybody, just so you know. I'm trying to support all of our fellow true crimers because, yeah, we love the support. So I want to support everybody too.
Absolutely. And it's fun listening to other people's takes on even the same cases that we do. It's fun to listen to the research and stuff that other people have found because we're still babies.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
With the research and everything and like, I don't know.
And learning. Like, I learned from other podcasts as
Absolutely.
Well. For sure.
It's fun.
So, Johnny Depp and Amber Heard. Talk a little bit about them. I think today Kate Moss got on the stand and said that, yeah, Johnny did not abuse her or push her downstairs.
So they were leaving the room is what she said. They were leaving the room and it had been raining and she slipped on the stairs and he was nowhere near her. He had left before, like he had walked off ahead of her and then she was coming down the stairs and it was rainy. So she slipped and she hurt her back and she yelled out and he came to her, picked her up, took her to her room, got her medical attention and everything. You know, the chivalrous shit that we all know he did.
Yeah. This is just my opinion. Guys, my opinion. I think Whitney is regretting. I think Whitney is regretting.
She's got regerts.
She definitely has regerts. I think so anyways, that she went against Johnny.
Well, see, I can't tell lied. By her face whether she has regrets or withdrawals.
Oh, yeah.
Because if you... again, the amount of drugs these people were doing at a certain point...
Oh, yeah, they're doing a lot. Maybe.
And seem to still be doing, at least in the herd side of the case.
The turd side?
Yeah. Yeah, she looks miserable sitting in the courtroom because she's in like the first row because she's not going to be called back as a witness. And then,
I mean, her butthole must be puckered because she lied on stand.
Did you see I've been on TikTok a lot today because apparently I have nothing better to do than feed my children. feed my children and get on TikTok. But anyway, there was somebody who isolated a portion where. Crazy doctor that had meth mouth too.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Where they were talking beforehand and they hadn't turned off the
mic
for like where at the podium.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds an awful lot like he said, yeah, I can lie on the stand. Is there anything in particular that I cannot lie about? And Elaine responds, no. Even without looking at subtitles, because I closed my eyes to listen to this, because they're like, oh, listen to what they said, because I hate listening to something and having subtitles, because you always hear what the subtitles say, so I'm like, yeah. I'm gonna listen. And my kids are around, so it's not like I can, like, full blast it. You know, like,
right.
It sounds an awful lot like that.
Like, where did they find him?
I have no fucking clue, but...
And why did they...
If I were on the jury, I would think Amber's case was an absolute joke. Only, even not knowing anything else outside of it, just seeing her witnesses alone would make me go, is she as crazy as they are?
And then Dr. Curry got back on the stand, mm-hmm. too, and she rocked it like always because she just awesome.
Always.
Somebody said that she reminds them of Heather Locklear.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, that's it. That's it. I was trying to...
It's a good comparison.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out. Who, too. But yeah, that's a good comparison. Yeah.
Hmm. But there is an ex-employee that was on the stand for TMZ, and I only watched a very short part of it
because I got distracted.
But Elaine looks at him and is like, you know that this trial is being televised, correct? He's like, I'm aware that there's cameras. She said, so you're only here for your 15 minutes of fame. Obviously, there was an objection because that's a very aggressive way to approach a witness.
Mm-hmm.
The judge overruled it, and he goes back at Elaine saying, you know what? No, I gain nothing from this. I am essentially going against TMZ, which is a very influential publication. And you could speculate to that all you want, just like I could speculate that you wanted your 15 minutes of fame, and that's why you allowed Amber to hire you.
Yeah.
And I was like, ba-bam! Yes. That was a very poor rendition of what happened, but... Essentially, that's what it was, and you need to find it because it was hilarious to watch.
All her facials.
The facial expressions on everybody that has testified on Amber's behalf is fucking hilarious.
It's just, what are we going to do when the trial is over?
I have no idea. I'm getting a lot of entertainment out of it, I'm not going to lie.
It is so
But the last couple of days have just been fucking bonkers. Oh, did you know that the trailer that Johnny supposedly...
Trashed.
Was only $60 worth of damage.
Yeah.
$60.
That's what he said. Yeah. I watched that
to
part.
To fix the a freaking light. Yeah.
And he said that the lot was junk anyways or something like that.
Yeah.
Oh, but he trashed the place.
Oh, he trashed it.
He broke a mirror and windows and all this other shit.
But also, you should go back and listen to his testimony again and watch Amber's face and what she says to her attorney because she forgets to cover her mouth a lot. And tell me what you think she said.
I'll have to go back and look at that.
You're going to have to.
Yeah. And I was watching, you know, TikTok.
The tickety-talk.
The clock app. And they, like, switched her position, like, mm-hmm. where she was sitting to, you know, be like,
Johnny. Oh, they've done that many times. But also, they've moved Elaine around a lot, too. Because she can't control the button for the microphone.
Oh, yeah. Which is
hilarious.
She kept objecting, and then he, like, didn't even say anything yet. And she mm-hmm. was like, objection. And then she was like, whoa, never mind. I don't object yet. I'll just wait till he says something else, and then I'll object. And I'm like, what in the world? This is just a shit show.
It really is. think somebody said it was like something just shy of Maury Povich show. And I started laughing because I was like, yeah, because somebody like randomly stood up in the courtroom and was like, Johnny, this is your baby.
That's funny.
It's great. But anyway, like we could totally do a deep dive on this one day. Just fucking knock it out for one of our episodes or a couple because it's long as shit. And if we do that, I'm absolutely going to play the devil's advocate. And
no, Sam.
I am going to.
No, Sam.
Because I think it's hilarious. Because, listen, I know that we've seen everything on TikTok and whatever else on social media, but the jury is not supposed to. So all they see is what's in the courtroom. That's it. So if somebody loses their attention in any way, they're off in La La Land. There's no keeping them. They can't just pause it and go get a snack and then come back.
If people have said, like, who the jury is, not who they are, but, you know, like, mm-hmm. I think there's, like, two Asian men or...
It's a very diverse group.
Yeah, it's, like, diverse in that... And I know one person was talking about it. They were in the courtroom in that you can't get anything from the jury. Like, you have no idea. They all just are, like, stone-faced.
Yes, except for, like, today or yesterday or something like that. There's, I think it's JD Trial or something like that on Instagram or Twitter or something. They said that one of the jury members, like, smiled and got really excited when Kate Moss was on the video.
Really?
Yeah. And then a couple of them when Dr.
Curry. I can't talk.
That one, yes. When she came in, a couple of them smiled at her as she got on the stand.
Well, Dr. Curry is gorgeous. And she really is freaking smart. Her intelligence makes her, like, 100 times prettier, too. I think, anyways. Intelligence.
Yes, absolutely.
Makes me hard.
Get your lady dick hard. See, I can't get away from talking about penises. I don't.
Penis. So I was listening to our last video. Our last episode, what the fuck ever. And at the very end, you know, we do our outro and shit. And I was like, oh, our outro, you know, we're killing it. And then all of a sudden, getting the dick. I was like, oh my God, Sam.
I could not put that in. And there was no good spot to put it in because I had to delete the section that you were talking about it. I had to.
Whatever. Oh, my left ear is now ringing and I cannot hear out of it.
Oh, that's weird.
That's lovely. It means an angel is speaking to me.
Is that what that means?
I don't fucking know. I've been on Witch Talk lately.
Yeah.
Have you ever been on Witch Talk?
I have.
What would you think if I started doing witchy things?
I'd be cool. I'd ask you a shit ton of questions.
That's one of the things that they say if your ears start ringing.
I learned from Native Talk, though, don't use white sage to sage your house.
Why?
Because apparently it was used by them to, like, open up the space for spirits.
Yeah.
Okay. So it helps bring them in, not shoo them away.
Yeah.
So don't use white sage.
So that's also something that Witch Talk, not white sage, but if you do anything like that, you need to learn how to protect yourself and close your circles, because if not, you'll have, like, little things coming out.
Yep.
Little demons. I don't want a demon.
No. No. Let's keep the demons away, okay?
One of these days, I'll tell you my demon story.
You know, see, this is perfect, because if you go onto our Linktree website, you can go and submit a form, and you can tell us your spooky shit.
Yeah, I would love to read somebody's spooky shit.
If you tell us your spooky shit, Paige will tell her spooky shit.
Hey, I have a lot of spooky shit.
She has a lot of spooky shit.
I also have a lot of childhood trauma, if y'all ever want to hear that, too.
Any takers?
I mean, you will... It's funny, but not.
Yeah. Funny, but not. So humor is our way of coping.
Yeah, no shit.
And dark humor at that.
Yes. So Sam, what's our story today?
I'm so glad you asked. I have tried to record this once before, and when I did, the audio was absolute shit.
No, she just cut me out of that shit. She's like, fuck you, Paige. Nobody's listening to you today.
And yeah, but no. The microphones did that for me.
I have okay, no we'll, fucking clue.
But we'll blame the so,
inadequacies?
No.
I can't inanimate objects?
Yes. I don't know why I can't talk today. Just.
It's my inadequacy and inanimate objects. That's what it is. It is.
Let's see.
All right. So we normally cover cases that are less known just because every case needs to have a voice. Every victim needs to have a voice. But this case in particular has piqued my interest.
Yeah, because it's all three. It's murder, it's mystery, and it's mayhem.
Absolute fucking mayhem.
So.
Yeah. So for a couple of years, actually, no.
Yeah, this story is fucking crazy.
When I first heard about it, I was like, what? And you'll have one of those moments toward the end. But anyway. But this case is the Dyatlov Pass. And I am going to butcher everybody's name, and I am so sorry. And if it's really bad, don't be surprised if you hear how to pronounce thing pop in where I say their names. I am going to go through, and the part that I ended up increasing when I came back to it to be like, okay, I want to make sure that I've covered everything thoroughly. Because you pointed some stuff out in the last time that I was recording and was like, I don't know about that. Turns out, you were right.
Oh.
And it's recorded now, so.
Hey.
There you go.
What's the saying? A broken clock is right at least twice a day.
Yeah, that is the saying. Yeah. Pretty sure you're right more often than that, but yeah.
Boom. I don't know about that. But boom.
That's perfect. All right, so I wanted to dig into each of the people because, listen, they are all fucking badasses. Every single person that went on this hiking / skiing trip / insanity, like, I'm just, that's what it is. They were all badasses.
Yeah, I mean, I am a badass, but I would not be there, no. Hell no.
These fucking women, I want to be their friends. Like, I just so their awesomeness could, like, rub off or some shit, like, That's the kind of energy I need.
They're Russian, right?
Yeah.
So they're on a whole nother level.
Oh, they are on a whole nother level.
Whole nother level.
But they're badasses. Every fucking person on this list is a badass. So if you didn't know, here's a slight snippet of the trip. Originally, there were 10 people, younger people, like early 20s, and then there was an extra person that was added, so he made the 10th person, and he was in his 30s. They all decided to go on this 15-day hike / ski trip in Russian mountains where it's, like, negative 30 degrees.
No, thank you.
No.
I'll stay at home.
Also, this was in the early 60s, and their main form of communications are letters and telegraphs. Just keep that in mind as I'm telling you about their trip and everything, but... And, oh, I got most of my information from dyatlovpass.com. And they've got journals, they've got pictures, they've got fucking the investigation, like, essentially everything from the investigation, autopsies, the photographs of the autopsies. I do not recommend looking at them because that each of these people have some connection to the Ural Polytechnic Institute, which is the university that everybody went to. So when I say UPI, that's what that stands for. And also, apparently over in Russia, at least at the time, they had like a sports unit. They would help plan and make sure that they had the proper destination, make sure that they had all the things that they would need for the trips. So the people involved, there's Igor Dyatlov, and if you haven't noticed, that is the name of the pass now. Because he was the leader of the group. He was a really, really smart guy, and he went to this university for radio engineering. He was known really well in the sports group because he made a homemade radio that he took on some of his trips.
That's cool.
It is really cool. So it's fun. But anyway, so he was the leader, and he had led several other trips. Shorter, longer, just and in various places. It didn't always have to be like a skiing trip. It could just be like a regular hiking trip. But everybody that went on these trips with him talked about how he was a great leader. He was very fair. One of the members of a previous group had confessed to him by the, like, he pulled him aside and said, "Hey, listen, I," this is not exact quotes, by the way. he said, "I ate more of the rations than I was supposed to." And instead of being a complete asshat and being like, "Oh, guess what he did, guys?" He was like, "Listen, when we get back into town, you're going to put the money that that ration cost back into the group fund." Mm-hmm. And that was it. Like, he didn't, he's like, "Don't do it again.
Yeah.
I'm glad you told me, but just, this is what the plan is." So he wasn't an asshole about it. Part of the dialovepass.com, they had a bunch of information about each of these, each of the people, and even letters that they sent right before they left for the mm-hmm. trip. But anyway, they had little quotes, and they would sometimes tell, like, little anecdotes, like the one with him not being an asshole. And for Igor, it was, "For Igor, the mountains were calling, and he had to go. He was brave, confident, experienced, and passionate. I know the kind. They can be wild when alone, but they always take care of their fellows. Igor had a sense of responsibility. Being a leader is a quality that cannot be acquired, but comes from the core of your heart. Mountaineering, you can learn if you feel the tug, but you can't make people follow you and trust you with their lives. This is a talent that Igor had, and he was a great leader." The next one. Zenaida, I'm not going to try to say her last name, but she goes by Zena. She was 22 when she went on this trip, and she was also a radio engineering major at the UPI. And again, she was a straight-up badass. So during one of her previous trips, one of her hiking trips that she went on, because each of these people went on multiple hiking trips, that was their passion. Mm-hmm. She was bitten by a fucking viper. Can't what even happened? Imagine. Like, they were on their return trip. She continued to carry her bags, not letting anybody else take anything from her. And even though she was in fucking pain, she walked her ass back to civilization.
Do they have anti-venom, I guess?
No idea.
But they suck it out.
I have no idea. Badass.
Well, yeah.
Not only did she go on a bunch of them, but she also led a couple of trips as well. So her being a young female leading a bunch of other people is kind of fantastic too, especially during that time. So one of the people I'm going to talk about, the sole survivor of the entire trip, because he ended up leaving the group and going back home due to some sciatica issues. He described her, his description was, "Everywhere she went, she filled the place with the pleasant breath of her soul."
Aww.
And that's adorable.
It is. What the fuck? Somebody say that about me.
Please?
Listen. No, just fucking say it. No, please.
When I die, don't be like, "Oh, she was a breath of fresh air. She lit up the room when she walked in." No, bitch. I looked like I was about to murder somebody.
You'll die. All right. I'll die before you, so it don't matter.
Anyway, so the next person is Yuri Krivenchenko. He was 23, but he went by "If It's Wrong, I Blame" pronunciation app thing. But he went by Georgi. Anyway, so he was really good friends with Igor. They went on a ton of hikes together. Anytime that Igor went somewhere, he was most likely there. And he went to UPI and studied construction and hydraulics. And he actually graduated in 1957. So after graduating, he began working in nuclear plants. The reason I'm bringing this up, you'll understand in a little bit. He was even sent to deal with the 1957 plutonium plant radioactive leak. So he was the life of the party. He was a fucking jokester. He was fucking hilarious. Again, I would love to be his friend. The reason I say this is because during their trip, they had, and I'll get into it a little bit more, but they had to wait for a train. And so he pulls out his mandolin and starts singing and acting like a fucking panhandle. And apparently, at this time, in the specific city that they were in, it's not allowed.
Yeah.
So he was detained by the police for a short time before they realized that he wasn't actually panhandling. He was just goofing around and playing. They're like, "Don't do that."
Yeah.
No, no. But then apparently, turns out that he may have actually been panhandling. Because he had asked one of the other people, who was the treasurer of the group, mm-hmm. had all the money and stuff, to buy extra rations of he wanted to buy something, and he didn't have the money on himself, so he asked her, and she said no.
So he had to get it somehow.
But he was singing in public, and he was told that singing in public places was forbidden.
What the fuck?
Little snippet here. His mom, after he passed, as a tribute to his favorite song and to him, she had an engraving. It said, took a piece of basalt, and I don't know what that is. And it was attached to a silver plate, and it said, with the engraving, I love you, life, and I hope this is mutual. Apparently that was part of his favorite song, and she wanted to have something to memorialize him. Then the next person, there's Rustam, or Rustam, probably. Rustam. He was 23. He graduated UPI in 1958. He was very quiet. He's very athletic, so there's not a whole lot about him. But he was also described as a bit of a risk taker. So, apparently, at some point, he and his father decided to travel to see his brother. Mm-hmm. And they had to go through a section of Russia, but it wasn't like a very populated area, and it was essentially the native inhabitants there did not like Russians. And so it was very dangerous to go through this specific area, and somehow he and his father both made it out alive, unscathed. It was great.
So they cheated death once again.
Yes.
Okay.
I don't know where I was at.
Next person.
Nikolai. And he went by Thibault because his last name was Tybalt or something like that. A portion of his hyphenated last name is Tybalt. Again, not going to attempt it. He graduated in 1958, with a degree in civil engineering, again from UPI. I didn't put a whole lot in here about him. But apparently he was really smart, did very, very well in school, and then ended up working in a construction department. The next one is Yuri Yudin. He was the lone survivor. He was the only survivor of the original group of 10. Before they started climbing the mountain on the actual hike, because there was lots of stops and trains and things, his back was hurting.
He had a premonition, so then he didn't go.
Maybe, I don't know. I don't know.
Sorry, keep going.
No, he had some issues with his sciatic nerve, and he wasn't able to walk properly, and he wouldn't have been able to carry all the gear. Right. So they ended up splitting of the gear and all that jazz. But anyway.
And then he went back home. How did he eventually die?
I'll get there.
Was it a log truck?
No. Okay. No. So even though he survived, he had a lot of guilt.
Oh, yeah.
A ton of survivor's guilt. So he didn't let this tragedy go. Like, mm-hmm. he continued researching, trying to figure out why. Because up until, like, 2 years ago, there was no clear answer.
Right.
It's like they just... So he did go on with his life. He didn't let it bring him down and just wallow in it. But he kept the stories alive, and he eventually was part of the Dyatlov Memorial they ended up creating to try to find answers. Right before his death in 2013, he was 75 when he died. Right before his death, he became a recluse. He stopped letting his friends come over, and he wasn't going out and being as social as he normally would have been, saying that he was writing a book about the Dyatlov Pass and everything.
And how to cheat death.
But when he died, his friends didn't find any manuscripts or anything.
So he wrote out a book about everything, and then it was gone.
Mm-hmm. But they did find a lot of newspaper clippings and things talking about the Dyatlov Pass incident. Anyway, so the next one is Yuri Doroshenko. He was 21 at the time, and he was also a student at UPI, and he was studying radio engineering. Ooh, okay, this one's a good one. Again, badass. So he was known for being impulsive, according to the Dyatlov Pass website, and they had a bunch of people that they ended up interviewing, like, a bunch of people. But anyway. So he was kind of famous in the school hiking club for having run off a fucking bear with a geologist hammer.
Nah.
I swear. So the story goes like this. While he was on a hike, it was a big group of people, Zena was with him.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't together at the time, but they were just in the group. Anyway, so he was off working to get the tent put up and everything. When Xena was further away from him, she noticed a bear coming in their general direction. She shouted out, "Hey, there's a fucking bear." Not a direct quote. He took the hammer that he was using to put the stakes into the fucking ground. Mm-hmm. He went after the fucking bear. Chased it for a little bit in the woods. As he was coming back to the camp, he was coming back with his little swagger. She decided at that point she was in love with him.
Aww.
And so they became inseparable. They did not, like, do anything inappropriate, like, because there was a whole societal norm thing there. Like, they talked constantly for the rest of the trip that they were on. And then once they got back into the town, or in the city, they began officially dating. And he even met her family and stuff like that. It was super cute. Unfortunately, a little bit before this trip that they were going on, they had broken up. And so it was a little weird at first for Xena, but at the same time, it's like, we're still friends. And he broke things off, not her.
Aw, that's sad.
But anyway, then there is Alexander. And I probably said that wrong, but I'm going to say it that way. Anyway, he studied nuclear physics at UPI.
Hot damn.
He had a very rough life at the beginning. His childhood was very rough. I'm not going to go into all of it. I do have it written down here, but I'm not going to. Real quick summary. His father was wealthy. Then war broke out. They were brought to essentially a concentration camp. He was still held in high respect there. And so they were able to get the rations and all of the things that they needed and all that jazz. But at some point during this time, his father was found dead on the train tracks, but there was no investigation, so it's real fucking shady. Anyway, so at some point after that, they stopped getting the special privileges and things like that because his father was no longer alive. They ended up moving, and they had to essentially start from scratch. I'm going to try to make this make sense, but it's probably not going to. So there is a communist group. And essentially you have to declare that you're communist and rise through the ranks. So you can start when you're 14, but Alexander didn't join until he was 18. I mention this only because they were poor and he did not do well in school. And for him to go to the university, he would have had to have, like, better grades and stuff like that. But anyway, so once he...
But he was, like, really fucking smart, right? Yeah. Because he was doing something with nuclear science.
But there's a theory behind that one, too.
Okay.
Because he joined this group and he made the right connections, they were able to get him into the university and...
Was he the 30-year-old?
No.
Oh. How old was he?
No, second. I didn't write his actual age down.
Oh, my gosh.
I know. He was 25.
He was 25. Okay. So he was a little bit older than that.
A little bit older. But anyway, so he joined the group at 18. He made really good connections, and he was able to get to the university, into the nuclear physics program, and he managed to get a secret assignment working with leading scientists.
Secret agent man. Secret. Anyways.
This job came with housing, food allowances, you know, everything that he didn't have. What he actually did, no one really knows. It was very secretive. It's very mysterious. So the next one, another badass woman, Ludmilla, but she went by Ludia. She was 21. And again, she was a fucking badass from a very young age. I just...
All these people are, like, super intelligent, too.
Sometimes. Yeah. So... This is another one that you're going to be like, huh. Yeah. So she was, from a very young age, like, she grew up on this little tiny island that, in the wintertime, you could walk across the ice to get to the mainland. But in the springtime, or when it's a little bit warmer and it's not solid ice, they had somebody that... She was, like I said, she was really good in sports. Like, she fucking did the damn thing. She was a short-distance runner.
Yeah, because island's small.
Short distances. You're an ass. when she finally got to the UPI university there, she studied engineering and economics.
Damn.
Yeah. So when I say she's a fucking badass, I mean she's a fucking badass. So she went on a fucking hike in 1957 It's like 2 years before this trip that they're taking, by the way.
Yeah.
She was fucking shot by a hunter that they had with them. She didn't let anyone carry her bags or lighten the load on her in any way. And she fucking walked back.
So she cheated death.
So the next one is the oldest one of the group, and he was brought in last minute. So originally it was the first nine that I talked about, and then he went by Sasha. I'm not going to try to say his first name, but he goes by Sasha. And he's 37, so he's a good 10, 12 years older than the majority of the people that were on this trip anyway. He graduated from the Institute of Physical Education in Minsk. In 1950. Before going to that institution, he was drafted into the Great Patriotic War, and he was in the armed forces from October of 1941 to May 1946. So other than that, not a whole lot was known about him, but I did find it interesting because I decided to look into news outlets about him. Mm-hmm. Because he was the most mysterious, and people kind of dug into that a little bit more.
Besides the undercover spy?
Besides that one, yes. So, while researching, I did find some Russian news outlet that had to get translated, so hopefully it translated properly. Anyway, so it talked in length about Sasha's work history. Don't know why that was very specific, but his work history. So he ended up getting a bunch of jobs in as a PE teacher, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
But he was not a consistent person in these jobs. He got fired a shit ton.
Why?
For just not doing his job, essentially. So he would either show up late, or he wouldn't show up at all, or he would show up in not his uniform that mm-hmm. he was supposed to wear.
So he wasn't, yelling at the kids.
Or... Right. And I thought that was funny, because some of the students that talked to the news outlet that I had talked about, he was their physical education teacher, and they remember going on hikes with him, and he was very understanding. Like, mm-hmm. he met them where they were at, essentially. So if they weren't very experienced, he had given them a little leeway. If they needed a break when they wouldn't normally take a break, he didn't yell at them, he didn't scream, he didn't do anything crazy. They enjoyed his class. So it's just odd that he kept getting fired. But it's funny that he seems to be the most mysterious when the other one is more mysterious. So now that we know everybody, let's get into this insane-ass story. So the trip began. And before the trip could begin, Igor had to go to the sports club leaders. That sounds weird. Anyway, he had to go present his itinerary and who would be going with them and all of the stuff.
To get it approved.
To get it all approved. And the plan was for a 15-day trip to this little town. I'm, again, not even going to try. To a small village on the other side of the mountains. And they would leave on January 23rd, and they would get to this little town around February 12th, if everything went well. Once they got there, they were going to telegraph and let them know that they made it safely and let them know what the plans were. The trip began on January 23rd, 1959. When the party left by train, initially. And according to the New Yorker, the group shared a journal, and then some of the individuals had their own journals. They also had, several of them had cameras, but not all of them. On the first train ride to the first city they were going to, a couple of them decided to hide under the seats and stuff to avoid buying tickets to make it cheaper on the group.
Yeah, so, I remember that.
So they hid away, and they avoided buying tickets, and that went fan-fucking-tastic. But, as I mentioned before, during the layover, Grigori had been detained shortly because he was pretending to be a panhandler. And he was singing with his little mandolin, which he took on most of his hikes.
He had a great singing voice.
I bet. It just seems like fun times. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so they had to take two trains to get to the city they were going to, and then from that city they were going to go on a bus to another location closer to where they were going to start their hike, and then they had to get on a horse. It was a whole process. So it was train, truck, the back of a truck, because there was 10 of them, then there was a horse, and then they were skiing, and then that's how they ended up getting to the logging camp called the Second Northern.
Logging camp?
Yes, the logging camp. Okay. So they were staying at the logging camp before they decided to go on, like, start the actual journey. Not that they hadn't already had a journey, but, you know, start the
second part of their journey.
The strenuous part of the journey. But unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on how you're looking at it, Yuri Yudin was having some issues with his sciatic nerve, and he had to turn back. This was on January 28th.
Probably because he was sitting on a train, then on a bus, then on a back of a truck, then on a horse.
But they were also having to sleep on in a little shed.
Yeah, so yeah, my sciatic would be like, what the fuck are you doing?
And pretty much, yeah.
Go back home, you dumb cunt.
Pretty much. So this started the strenuous journey, and they'd have to pass through the mountain, or go around the mountain, whatever, to get to the little village where they would send the telegraph. That was the goal. When February 12th came and went, and no word from the group, the UPI was contacted by frantic family members of the group. On February 20th, the search began. Like, they had to get everybody there, but yeah. Search began around that time. So, the volunteers included students from UPI, prison guards from the nearby prison, Mansi hunters, which are the
local tribe.
Yes. There was local police, military deployed planes and helicopters searching for them. So about 5 days later. Now again, they had the idea of where they were going to be.
Right.
But they had to start at the beginning and they had to work their way.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, negative 30 degree temperature is not easy to search for people. So that's kind of why it took so long. But anyway.
Yeah, my leaf blower technique wouldn't work there.
No. Not even a little bit. Mm-mm. So on January 25th, students found ski tracks, and then the next day, they discovered the tent. This is a very large tent that held all 9 people that were on this trip. And in this tent, they had, you know, their sleeping arrangements or whatever, but they also had a stove that had a pipe that led out of the tent.
Right.
And I will post pictures of that. It was mostly covered by snow. It was like a quarter of the very top. You could only see, like, the very top. Peaks of it.
Which is crazy because the tent was covered, yet the ski tracks were not.
Yeah. Thank you for pointing that out. The tent was above the tree line. So the trees are down here. They went up a little bit to kind of have the side of the mountain essentially to cover the wind. So the spot that they found the tent was officials called Height 1079. And the Mansies had another name for it. And I would attempt to say that, but I'm going to butcher that and couldn't even try. But it translates to Dead Mountain. They find the tent, they dig it up, there's no sign of them.
Have people went hiking on this mountain before?
Yeah.
So this wasn't unusual. I mean, unusual to hike it. It wasn't unusual to hike it.
I don't think it was done very frequently, but it was done enough that they had planned to do it. And they would have had to have...
They knew exactly where they were going because it had been done before.
I believe so, yes.
Okay.
I could be wrong. Probably am. I'll correct myself later if I am, but anyway. yeah, so they had a general idea of, like, the path they needed to take, and if I'm not mistaken, others had made that trek before, which is kind of what spurred their want to do that, because it is a more challenging trek.
Right. I didn't know if maybe people have attempted to do it, and then they ended up not doing it, you know, not getting as far.
Yeah, I don't know.
And then turned around and come back, and so that's why they're like, oh, yeah, we're gonna fucking do it.
That's a very big possibility.
Yeah. I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But anyways.
I don't know.
So why did they call it Death Mountain?
I don't know. There was a reason, and I forgot to write it down, so I'm not going to try to wing it and say, it's because of this, because I will be wrong. I will be. The tent was found, and...
Nobody was inside.
Unburied. And there was no sign of the group.
Mm-hmm.
What they did find was the majority of their hiking gear, food set out like they were going to return to it, and then also massive gashes in the tent. I will explain that in a little bit. So they see this, they're like, well, where the fuck are they? So then they continue to search, but now it's more localized, you know, kind of the general area. So they spread out.
So food was out.
Mm-hmm.
So if it was animals or people, they would probably take that food, correct?
At least the animals would.
Death don't need to eat.
Tis true. So anyway, about 100 feet down the hill toward the tree line, they find what they described as very distinct footprints, and about 8 or 9 sets of them. They weren't running away from camp. It appeared that these footprints looked like somebody had just walked out. But the extra odd thing about this is it wasn't boot prints. They were footprints. Like, you could see the toes. And you could tell that some of them had socks on, but others did not. Some of them had shoes, but not all of them. Which is odd, because negative 30 degree weather.
Yeah.
So, they kept going. And they kept searching. The next morning, some of the searchers found the bodies of Grigori and Yuri under a tall cedar tree. I'm going to try to explain this in the best way that I can without making it too confusing. This big cedar tree, mm-hmm. big ass tree,
yeah,
had branches that were broken.
Mm-hmm.
Also, there was bits of skin.
On the tree?
On the tree, bark. Also, there are bits of burnt pieces on the tree. It looked like it had been burnt, but it didn't stay long, so it just kind of like singed it for a second and it was gone. Beside the two men that were found was a dead fire. So it was just... there was obviously remnants of a fire. Odd, though, they were only in their underwear. Like, they had, like, long johns or something on, but it was obviously not clothing that you would wear to go outside in negative 30 degree temperature.
Oh, well, yeah, I wouldn't go outside at all
in negative 30 degree temperature. This is very true.
But they're Russian, so...
they are.
They are different breed.
Then... I think the next day, or that same day or the next day, Igor and Zena were found. They're further up the slope, facing the tent. They were also in, like, weird states of undress, but what I found odd was that their hands were clenched into fists.
Yeah.
It's odd. So immediately, those four bodies were autopsied, and the medical examiner noted a number of bizarre features. I'm going to go into... a few of those bizarre things. Not every little injury they had. All of these individuals had bumps and bruises and things on them.
Lacerations
and stuff. But some of these things are more mysterious, I guess, than...
not common.
Yeah, like, if they were to die of hypothermia or something, they wouldn't have some of these injuries. But, let me get into it. So, Grigori had blackened fingers and third degree burns on his shin and foot. Inside his mouth, they found a chunk of his own flesh that he had bitten off of his right hand.
The fuck?
There were signs of animal scavenging, so like some of the scrapes and like injuries would potentially come from that. He had a severe frostbite on his ears, nose, toes, and fingertips. Grigori's official cause of death is hypothermia. Yuri's official cause of death is hypothermia. But this one seems a little bit weird to me. In his hair, they found moss, pine needles, and a burn on one side of his head. He had blood on his ears, nose, and lips. He also had a gray foam type liquid coming out of his mouth, which is usually caused by, which is typically caused by a pulmonary edema. All of his fingers and toes were frostbitten, obviously. And then he had bruises on his underarms, shoulders, and shins. And on his arms.
Underarms, shoulders, and shins. So if he was climbing up a tree, maybe.
Maybe. But it also doesn't make sense. I don't know. Okay, so this one's questionable. For a couple of reasons. Then again, I got a lot of this information because you can see the autopsy reports on the Died Love Pass website. So apparently liver mortis spots were located on the back of his neck, torso, and his extremities. So when somebody dies and they are in one position, their blood kind of settles there.
Okay.
Which causes these spots.
Mm-hmm.
And so whenever the blood stops moving, and if they're moved, then those spots don't go away. So if they die laying on their back, and somebody moves them very quickly while their blood is still moving, and moves them to the front, liver mortis spots will be in the front.
Mm-hmm.
The reason I say this is because he was found laying face down.
The swats were on his back.
Mm-hmm. So, obviously, it seems there's some sign of repositioning there. Also, random little tidbit, too. According to dietlovepass.com, typically, for hypothermia to be the cause of death, there would be a need to be a significant, like a specific amount of urine in the bladder, and his was much, much lower than the typical hypothermia, I'm going to say diagnosis, but I don't know what else to call it.
Cause of death, I mean, I don't know. Hypothermia.
Typically for hypothermia. Yeah, I don't know. Perfect. Okay. The gray fluid that was found coming out of his mouth began speculation that someone or something was pressing heavily on his chest. And it's important to mention because, you know, devil's advocate over here. It could have potentially happened by him falling out of a tree and hitting very hard. But there were no other injuries to his body. So I don't think he had injuries. Like, there were bruises, but there wasn't, like, significant. I don't think there was significant enough damage to the rest of his body to signify that he had fallen out of the tree.
Okay.
Make sense? Mm-hmm. Maybe. Sort of. Probably not. It's fine. So Igor, his cause of death was also hypothermia. He had a ton of scrapes and bruises on his head, his knee, shins, hands, and forearms. I feel like it's important to note that the back of his hands were scraped, cut, and bruised in the same fashion that a bare-knuckle fight would cause.
Okay.
So his hands and stuff, his knuckles were bruised, and there were some lacerations there.
Mm-hmm.
And so on dietlovepass.com, they pointed out that that is exactly the injury. It's very similar to the injuries that you would get if you were in a bare-knuckle brawl.
Okay.
Let's move on to Zena. Her cause of death was hypothermia due to violent accident.
What?
Yeah. So she had bruises and cuts on her face, frostbitten fingers, and then a long, bright bruise on her torso. Her right torso.
She has two torsos?
The right side of her torso.
Oh, okay.
A long, bright bruise on her right torso. On the right side of her torso. Hey. So, the reason, again, violent accident seems odd to me. Because they were like, it's almost as if she was hit by a baton. You know, like, police baton?
So, I'm trying to think of what else would be out there that you could hit.
I mean, maybe she was the one that climbed the tree and fell.
I don't know.
And landed there, but I feel a like ski? That would... Potentially, maybe.
She hit by a ski?
Yeah.
Or by a stick?
No idea. But there wasn't any broken bones for her.
Just a bruise.
Just a bruise.
Okay.
They were trying to come up with reasons why they would be in such varying states of undress, because each of them were found with, like, no shoes and in their undergarments they would normally not wear.
Yeah.
Even just sitting in a tent, they wouldn't wear that. So, the theory was paradoxical undressing or something like that. It's where when you are in one of the stages of hypothermia, your body makes you feel like you're hot. So you start stripping down.
Mm-hmm.
Or their friends who had survived them took their clothes off of them and started wearing their clothing.
Yeah.
Because you're going to do what you can to survive.
Mm-hmm.
Especially since no one seemed to have... There's, like, two people, and I don't know which ones. Two of the men were more dressed than the rest.
Mm-hmm.
And in their own clothing, not in somebody else's.
Yeah.
and nobody else had time to prepare. For whatever happened, they didn't have time. A few days later, Rustem's body was found not too far from Igor and Zena's. He was found on the slope leading back to the tent with one sock and one felt booty. The autopsy revealed a minor skull fracture, but his official cause of death was hypothermia. He had a ton of bruising, cuts, scrapes all over his face, and oddly enough, he had a bruise on his knuckles, just like Igor had. And obviously, we can't forget about the fractured frontal bone.
Mm-hmm.
I was very curious about this, obviously. So, the Dietlov Pass website explained that Rustem would have suffered some form of loss of coordination due to that skull fracture, which would have sped up the process of hypothermia. Mm-hmm. But what's odd, though, is that had he had this loss of coordination, yes, he would have fallen. Yes, he would have, like, bumped his hands and knees and shins and probably elbows or something like that. But it's almost as if he had fallen on his face multiple times.
Yeah.
Which does not make sense. But then also, he wouldn't have been able to get very far. So he would have had to be carried, but if that's the case, then why was he further up the slope than Igor and Zina, who were the only two that were found closer to him?
Good question.
Again, weirdness. So
this whole thing is weird.
It really is. So at this point, the homicide investigation began, and it was led by Lev Ivanov. So they did all of the evidence collecting. They did toxicology. They took witness statements from the party and the people that they met along the way. They took pictures of everything, and they pretty much took everything that they needed from the scene, including the tent, which they gathered up and took to the police station. And by some crazy random happenstance, one of the officers was getting their suit tailored, mm-hmm. and so there was badass woman fixing a suit. And I don't know how she managed to see the tent, but somehow she laid eyes on it, and she was like, hey, the way this is ripped looks like it's from the inside out. So all of these gashes were of people getting out of the tent, not people coming in.
And, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, by the way, the opening of the tent had, like, those, like, wooden doggle buttons. It wasn't a zipper. It was, like, actual buttons that kind of went up the thing.
Okay.
And they all but, like, the last two, I think, were
buttoned.
So anyway, people going out, not people going in.
Right.
Which, I get, just added an extra bit of mystery to this whole fucking bonkers case. So the four remaining members of the party were not found until early May, when the snow and ice began to melt a little bit more, and it was a little bit safer for people to actually be out there.
Right.
A Mancy hunter and his dog came across the remains of a makeshift snow den. And this was about 250 feet from the big cedar tree where the first two were found. There they found tattered clothing, which were like black sweatpants with the right leg cut off, left half of a woman's sweater. Mm-hmm. So they got some avalanche probes, and when they brought them back out, there were pieces of flesh. So, obviously, they excavated this whole area.
I don't like when you say probe.
Probe.
You sounded like JP. Suck it, turn nuggets.
So when they excavated the area, they uncovered the four remaining members of the party lying in a rocky stream bed. I said that super slow because I keep wanting to say steam bed, and that's just not right. They were covered in at least 10 feet of snow. So I know that there's I'm kind of jumping here, and I'm sorry, but I know there's the theory of paradoxical undressing or hypothermia, whatever. They were very well aware of what they were doing when they made this little den, because over by the cedar tree, there was a bunch of limbs missing from some of the smaller trees around. They took those limbs and they made this little den, and they put the limbs down so less of their body was going to hit the snow. Mm-hmm. So there was forethought on this, so they weren't going crazy.
Right.
So before I start on the autopsies of the next four individuals, it is very important to note that the person that was doing the autopsy made a statement along the lines of the damage to their bones and their bodies was significant, and compared it to being hit by a car.
Wow.
So we'll start with Alexander. His official cause of death was hypothermia. So he had bits of his, the soft tissue from his upper face was missing, and they contribute that to scavenging animals. And the rest of them kind of have little pieces like that as well. But the cartilage of his nose was flattened and compressed. Not necessarily broken, but fucking compressed. In the autopsy report, and I'm going to quote it, The neck is long and thin and deformed in the area of the thyroid cartilage. Not entirely sure what this is telling me, but I feel like there was some major damage to his neck and they kind of chose to ignore it. Or maybe they just couldn't explain it, so they were like,
This is what it looks like.
So then there was Nikolai. His official cause of death was, and I had to look this one up because it didn't give it to me like it did the others. Legit, this was in quotes from the medical examiner or whatever. Died as a result of violence. There were bruises on his upper lip and left side. There was a cut on his lower right forearm. He had a massive skull fracture on the right side of his head. And this was so severe that a piece of bone was lodged into his brain. So an injury like this would cause such a severe concussion, leading to unconsciousness. And so it makes me think that he got this while he was there, because if he had not, if he got it, say, at the cedar tree where everybody seemed to be, they would have had to fucking carry him.
Yeah.
And I don't think they would have done that because they didn't carry any of the other people.
Yeah.
So that just seems odd.
Mm-hmm. Unless the other people are already dead.
But if he goes unconscious, like, what, I don't know. So then there's Sasha. He also died as a result of violence. He had soft tissue missing from his upper face. Again, scavenging animals. There was an open wound on the right side of his skull, leaving bone exposed. And then he had multiple ribs broken on one side of his body. And when you look at the autopsy report, it has, like, the outline of where injuries occurred. It's, like, two parallel lines going down the side of his, going down his ribs.
Mm-hmm.
So they were broken, like, on the front or the side,
mm-hmm.
and also in the front. So, like, there was either, they were both in the front, or one was on the side and one was in the front. It's kind of hard to tell, but there were two very distinct lines going down. And I'm not entirely sure how one would get broken ribs in such a manner.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like it's hard to break ribs, but maybe not. Also, his eyeballs were missing.
That is scary.
Liuda. And her official cause of death is hemorrhage to the right atrium of the heart, multiple fractured ribs, and internal bleeding. So I'm feeling like this was probably also death as a result of violence.
Is that what they said?
Well, this one was more specific, like, she died as a result of this, rather than
violence.
Yeah. But they could probably also describe it that way as well. Anyway, so again, a lot of the soft tissue around her upper face was missing due to scavenging animals. Her nose cartilage was broken and flattened. Like, actually broken, not like before where it was like, it doesn't necessarily mean a broken nose. No, her fucking, it was flat. She was also missing a portion of her upper lip, leaving her teeth and upper jaw exposed. That's a fun image. I'm sorry. Her ribs were broken on the left and right side of her body. So on both sides, when you look at the picture, it's like a little skewed. Like, one side has a few less ribs that were broken, and the other side was, like, all the way down. But it was on either side of her chest.
Yeah.
Again, don't know how somebody would have broken ribs that way. Even if 10 feet of snow piled on top of you, how does that happen? Also, her eyes were missing as well. And her tongue was removed. I say removed because it was too far back for her to have bitten it off. And if she had bitten it off, then it would be somewhere.
Odd. And it wouldn't have been an animal either because...
Because in her stomach, they found... I don't know how to say this word, but people typically refer to it as coagulated blood.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a dark brown fluid. But that means that her tongue was removed
while she was alive,
while her blood was still pumping through her veins. So take that and do with it as you will.
It was ripped out of her mouth.
Yeah.
Because it was farther back
mm-hmm.
than what her teeth could bite. Yeah. So just think about that. Somebody grabbed inside of her mouth
I don't want to think about that, Paige. I don't want to. It's bad enough that I have the images that I have in my head because I'm a dumbass and I looked at all the fucking autopsy pictures.
But for someone to have that much strength to be able to do that, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Or cut it out. Like, I don't know. It didn't specify whether it was...
He would have to pull, or whoever would have to pull it out far enough to be able to cut it out where her teeth wasn't there. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. No, that's fucking disturbing.
Yeah.
So there's that.
And then the eyeballs, too.
And the eyeballs. And some people are saying that was a result of scavenging animals, but if that's the case, then why didn't any of them? Why did the others have their eyes still intact?
And not those two.
Yeah. And if there's the argument of, oh, they were in a specific location, okay, there was two other people there and they had their eyes intact.
Jeepers creepers.
Maybe that.
Apparently he wanted her tongue.
I hate that so much. Okay, so to continue the oddities that revolve around this case, for some reason, they took the clothing items that everyone was wearing and they tested them for radiation. Seems suspicious. Because that's not a normal thing to do.
No.
No. Okay, so... specifically, a sweater that was worn by Liuta had the highest amount of radiation. Then there were pants that were worn by Alexander that was kind of the lowest, but still, he had a shit ton. And this was not like background radiation like you would find with fucking bananas or some shit. This is... They were at a nuclear plant, an unprotected level.
Which one worked at the nuclear plant?
It was Grigori.
Okay.
So the first victim.
So he worked at a nuclear plant?
He did.
And he was the first one that they found?
Mm-hmm.
So do you think he stole some radiation?
So stole something that was radioactive? Maybe?
Maybe he stole a radioactive animal? What if they were doing animal testing? Awesome. And he brought it with them to show? And then that thing went crazy.
Okay.
Or there's a prison nearby.
There is.
And they tested radioactive shit on the prisoners and made a superhuman.
And that led to the stream, and the stream was found under them. So maybe. There are some people who are like, oh, well, he worked in nuclear plants all the time. He was there with the radiation spillage and all of this bullshit, blah, 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 blah. The problem with that is, one, while he was working there, he was... protected. He had the full gear and everything. Two, if there was any radiation that was attached to his clothing at that time, it would have been washed multiple times since then, since it was like 2 years prior to this hike, and that radiation would have dissipated with each wash. If that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm.
So unless they had some nuclear
matter
thing,
mm-hmm.
it wouldn't account for it. They pointed out on the Dyatlov Pass website that this particular contamination level exceeds the normal level for people who work with radioactive substances. It's not fucking normal. Something was going on, but we still don't know what it was.
Probably a dump site over there.
Possibly.
Which made radioactive people and or animals. The radioactive Yeti.
The Yeti. Okay, so on... I'm almost done, by the way. We're getting into theories in just a second.
What if it was just the train conductor? Because he was pissed off because they didn't pay him. And he just followed him up there and slaughtered them all.
That seems excessive.
Mm-hmm, it does. Yeah.
So on May 28th, the homicide investigation was closed. Ivanov had... concluded that homicide had not been a factor. He ended his report with, and I quote, "It should be concluded that the cause of the hiker's demise was an overwhelming force they were not able to overcome." What the fuck does that mean?
God smited them? Death came for them?
He's collecting on his... I don't know. So, after this incident... anyone that was involved with this trip in any way, shape, or form, they were fired. The Dead Mountain, area that the tent had been placed was placed off limits. Nobody was allowed. So it wasn't until 2020. All right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you said 2 years ago.
It wasn't until 2020 that they gave a somewhat reasonable explanation of what happened. And I say somewhat because it's super fucking sketchy. So one, the skiers had died because they stumbled into a secret weapons testing grounds. There are people that claim that live near-ish, like in that general vicinity, that they saw flashes of light and moving balls in that direction. Like moving balls of light in that direction.
I mean, I do think
around that time.
Yeah, I think there was some kind of fire ball or flamethrower or something because of how the tree was burnt mm-hmm. and the guys were burnt.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there had to have been some kind of light for sure.
Yeah. Ivanov in 1990 actually published an article with the title either The Mystery of the Fireballs or The Enigma of the Fireballs. One or the other. Translation, it's a little weird sometimes. The article stated, this is another one of those theories, stated that the skiers had been killed by heat rays or balls of fire associated with the UFOs.
Goodness gracious, great balls of fire.
During the investigation, Ivanov had apparently found trees, like I said, with unusual burn marks, having no epicenter. So, a fire had been there, or a source of heat had been there, but it wasn't like a fire spread from a campfire, if that makes any sense.
Do you think that they were trying to set the tree on fire to maybe try and get help?
Maybe. And they tried it with multiple trees in that area.
Yeah.
Possibility. So, for some reason, this confirmed his theory of a heat ray of some sort. Also, one of their cameras, like, they had found a bunch of cameras. And actually, a little tidbit here that I did not write down. Sasha actually had a camera around his neck when he was found. But Yuri Yudin, the one who had survived, only remembered a certain number of cameras. And Sasha had one of those cameras already. So it's like an extra one came out of fucking nowhere. I don't know. Anyway, I bring up the cameras because one of their cameras showed like flares or streaks across a black background.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously that was the UFOs that were shooting fireballs or lasers or something at the individuals.
Like UFOs, like government UFOs or UFOs like aliens?
Aliens.
E.T. phone home. Yeah, I don't think E.T. is going to blow up random people on a
mountain. I feel like that's probably not either. So I kind of went back and forth. But along the lines of the weapons testing, there was, in 2008, a 3-foot-long piece of metal was found in the area, which allegedly was part of a Soviet ballistics missile, which could potentially explain the radiation levels if something had happened that night. But if that were the case, then why wasn't everything just kind of fucked up? Yeah, and they were able to find things.
Right.
There's the theory of maybe it wasn't a weapons testing site, but a testing grounds of some sort with radiation. Because nobody was ever, like the Manseys were around, but nobody was in that specific area for any length of time.
Mm-hmm.
Ivanov's supervisor, I am not going to try to say this man's name. There's too many vowels. Anyway, this man recalls finding it odd that they were asked to test for radiation to begin with. And then shortly after he kind of questioned this, the deputy prosecutor met with the team and ordered them to tell people the deaths were accidental.
That's suspicious.
That's weird. So then there's the KGB CIA theory. For some reason, all of these theories with the KGB or the CIA or anything that's like secret government bullshit is focused on Sasha because he had a military background. I couldn't find a theory where it was Alexander that was the topic of the secret meetups or whatever.
Yeah.
So the theory is that Sasha was, and potentially two others in the group, were part of the KGB, assigned to meet a group of CIA operatives. to feed them false information.
Sam, knock knock.
Who's there?
The KGB. The KGB wait for no one.
I love you.
I love the off.
The problem I have with this is if there was a group of people that were there that were extra, why weren't their footprints also found? Or any sign of them in general?
Because they're the KGB.
They can fucking fly?
No. All the other footprints were probably covered up and then they made those footprints.
Ah, gotcha. Then there's an avalanche theory. Like a straight up big ass avalanche, like destroy everything.
That doesn't.
Again.
How would her tongue get out of her mouth? Did the snow snatch it out of her mouth? I don't think so.
I mean, there's that, I guess. There was the theory of carbon monoxide poisoning, which is somebody decided to point out because they were getting out of the tent. So they were like, oh, maybe the stove had clogged up or something. And for carbon monoxide was too much. The levels were too high in the tent, which is why they had to leave. Maybe, but I think that even if there is a high level of carbon monoxide, you would still have forethought to put on a bunch of clothing and then go outside or open the tent in general.
They did open the tent.
I mean, they did, but not in the way that they would normally do. I don't buy it. Then there's the theory that there was madness caused by alcohol or hallucinogenic mushrooms, because the Manses would have, like, mushrooms and shit drying, like, hanging up to dry. So, like, oh, maybe they took those. They were rowdy kids. And they didn't know what it was for, and so they just decided to eat it, because apparently that's what children do. That's what young people do. They just see things, and they're like, oh, I'm going to put this in my mouth and eat it.
I mean, that's what I do, but...
Yeah, you do. Anywho, they're like, oh, some of that food must have been hallucinogenics. Then there was the whole, they were murdered by the Mansi hunters themselves, which is not... I don't buy this one either, because the local Mansi group had helped them with the search. They didn't show any outward aggression to people being there to search for the hikers. So my favorite theory is the fucking Yeti. I don't know why this is my favorite theory.
The radiation-fueled Yeti.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It has to be. Mm-hmm. I mean, Yetis have crazy strength, right? Like, they would be able to break ribs.
I've never seen a Yeti, so I don't know.
I don't know. I would assume that is. Anyway, so one of the reasons that they had this theory is because in Nikolai's last picture, there is a picture of...
A Yeti.
I will post this as well, because it tickles me just a little bit. I'm not gonna lie. Because it's just like a fuzzy picture of someone in the snow. And there's no features. Covered from head to toe in, like, darkness. Maybe it's Death himself.
What if, you know how they had, like, broken ribs on both sides? Mm-hmm. The Yeti just wanted a hug. And he didn't realize that he was hugging them mm-hmm. so hard. And their eyes popped out.
Yeah, the two that were... I had broken ribs, I had no eyes. Maybe.
So he hugged them so tight. He was so excited to be their friend, and he hugged them so tight.
Aww.
And then she started screaming, and he got scared. So he just
bit her tongue out.
Snatched it because he wanted her to stop screaming.
That's an interesting theory. Yeah. All right. So.
Yes, I know. I'm fucked up, Sam.
So in the last time that we recorded this episode, Paige brought up the phrase, from now on, we know that snowmen exist. Mm-hmm. And from what I can gather from the Dyatlov Pass website is that this is essentially a...
bad translation. Miss,
yeah, a bad translation. It kind of got spread through a documentary or something.
Yeah, I heard it on multiple outlets.
But what it really was, or what they believe this came from, was the group was apparently working on a... they called it a satirical propaganda leaflet the night of the incident. It was dated for February 1st. I'll post a picture of the transcript that was translated from Russian to English, but it was also titled The Transcript of the Dyatlov Group Combat Leaflet. One section was labeled the Philosophical Seminar, and written in that section was, the topic of love and hiking takes place daily in the tent premises, parentheses, stop wiggling your eyebrows at me. Central Hall. Lectures are given by Dr. Thibault, and postdoctorate of love sciences, Dubonina. And then another section is labeled something. I couldn't quite figure out what the word was. Quiz. And it says, can 9 hikers get by with 1 stove and 1 blanket? Then under the heading science, they wrote, this is the Yeti part, by the way. In recent years, there has been a heated debate about the existence of the Yeti. According to recent reports, Yeti lives in the North Urals near Mount, some mountain. And then under the heading of sport, they wrote, a team of radio technicians, including comrades Doroshenko and Zena, set a new world record for portable stove assembly. 1 hour, 2 minutes, 27.4 seconds.
Ooh.
They had it down pat, apparently.
Yeah.
So on the night that they believe that this incident occurred, winds were about 65 miles per hour, and temperatures were negative 30. In July of 2020, a new investigator held a press conference stating that a slab of snow sliding over the tent was most likely the answer to all of the issues. And then after that, turned into hypothermia-induced craziness. They came up with a theory by looking at the pictures and the diagrams of where everything was and where everybody was found. And so essentially, because they had, the way they had set up the tent, they said that they had created a hollow from the right angles of the slope, which is where they put the stakes for the tent. So then when the wind picked up, the snow slab detached from the slope and buried most of the tent, pinning down the occupants and possibly causing injuries. Fearing for an avalanche, they cut their way out of the tent and fled to the rock ridge 150 feet away, which is the cedar tree, which is what they call a natural avalanche limiter. I don't know. I don't do outdoor things, especially not mountain things. When the avalanche didn't come, they were unable to find their way back in the dark, which was about a mile. So they believe that somebody had climbed up the tree to try to spot the tent and then fell, which caused the scraping on the tree. I'm not sure which one they believe fell, because everybody had some crazy injuries, so I don't know. And then after that, hypothermia and what happens with hypothermia, all the stages, created
chaos.
What happened next?
They fought each other because one thought that they were right and the other one didn't. Come this way, don't go that way, listen, stay together, separate, and then they just brawled it out. But that doesn't
take account to any of the injuries.
Yeah, no. I mean,
some of them, yes. Like, the 5 that were found before, it was odd that they had certain bruises and things, but it wasn't just absolutely batshit crazy. Whereas the last 4 that were found had insane injuries that were literally compared to that of someone getting hit by a car.
Yeah.
I don't know what I believe more. My favorite is the Yeti, just because it just seems kind of silly, but...
Well, here's mine. Here's okay. My theory.
Please tell me your theory that you came up with.
All of them sounds like they cheated death at one time or another. So, death came back for them, Final Destination style, and took them out. Because, I mean, Final Destination is a crazy-ass movie.
Scares
and they
the
die,
shit out of me.
They die in crazy-ass ways.
Yeah.
Or maybe they got in the back of a psycho's truck and was like, hey, these people are going up this mountain. Nobody's going to know that we did this. Let's go.
Yeah. I don't know what I believe more, because in each of the theories, there's like bits and pieces that you can kind of pick from and be like, this kind of makes sense, but you have to exclude so much other things.
Mm-hmm. Like the slab, it makes sense if they were to have all died right there.
Yeah.
Where hypothermia.
In the tent. Because if a slab of snow, and I'm assuming, again, don't know much, if a slab of snow hit the tent,
but
how would they rip themselves out and then the tent be buried?
They're not saying that it hit the tent yet. They're saying that it sounded like that it was coming, so they had to hurry up and escape before it came, right?
No.
Oh.
It said pinning the occupants.
Oh.
Pinning some of them. So the way they tried to explain it, like, I can't remember which one it was. The one that had the big fracture to his brain, to his skull, that had a piece of his bone stuck in his brain.
Mm-hmm.
They think that it hit him, like the slab of snow came in, he was like standing or something, I don't know, and it hit him, and then it caused that damage. But then if that's the case, then why would they take the time to get him out and carry him down the hill and then also to over to the den?
Unless it didn't fuck him up too bad. Because you know that one story where that he was shot in the face and shot in the stomach by his son, and he still went ahead and did all his daily activities, and then finally his body just didn't have any more in it, and he just...
Yes.
So what if he just had, like, a shit ton of adrenaline?
Maybe.
And that was carrying him.
I don't know. I still don't buy it. And neither do the locals there.
Yeah.
They believe it has something to do with weapons testing and...
The government.
Government. So, anyway, that is our long-ass episode of the Dyatlov Pass, and I'm sorry if I gave you way too much information, and I absolutely apologize for the fun descriptions. However, I did have to look at the... I didn't have to, but I did because it was part of the research. The photographs of how they were found, the autopsies, and everything that goes along with that, and that's just not a pleasant picture in your head. So, again, I know I've said this before, I do not recommend. Don't recommend going to look at those, but I do recommend going to the website and reading their diaries, that, if you can read Russian, hell yeah, but, if not, you know, a lot of what they have on there, documents-wise, they have translated to English. And then there's photographs of them, and looking through the photographs that they had took throughout the whole trip is really fucking cool. Really sad. But they were having a fucking blast.
Yeah.
Like, they... I don't know. It's just fun to look at, because they were happy.
Yeah.
And I wish it didn't end that way, but...
Yeah, because they were really smart. Had a lot of potential.
Mm-hmm.
Really young.
Yeah. So, there's my mysterious. We had to throw in a mystery because, you know, murder, mystery, and mayhem.
That was all three.
Or potentially just one or two. Because if it wasn't murder, then...
It definitely was murder.
I agree with you. I agree that there was something more than just hypothermia-induced insanity. So, how are we gonna end this episode?
You said you were gonna look up some killer pickup lines.
And by killer, you mean serial killer pickup lines.
You like what I did there?
God, I'm an idiot. Let me find them again. One of my favorites that I found was, "You need to come back to my place to see what's inside my trunk."
Giggity.
"I smell like chloroform. You want to smell?"
That is fucked up.
Yes, I'm terrible. I am so sorry. I am so sorry.
No, you're not.
I'm not, though. "Your place or mine. I have the tools ready. And a rope. And a knife."
And it just keeps going. And going. And going.
"Mind if I try on your skin? It's nice."
No. "I'm calling the police because you look killer, babe." That was cheesy.
You went for cheesy. I went for straight up serial killer pickup
lines. Went for fucked upness.
"Could you please give me the directions to your heart and kidneys?"
Oh my God, that one's good. I like that. I'm going to have to use that one. "Are you the government? Because I want you to take me out."
Oh. I would try that one. All right, I'm going to end on this one, on my serial killer ones. "I've never met you before. Could you be from Tennessee? Because that's the only state I'm not wanted in."
That's hilarious. That one's good. "Claustrophobia is one of my fears, but I'd like to get in your tight space anytime."
That is beautiful. That is beautiful.
Oh, that's not even a serial killer one, but I just thought it was funny.
Oh, that's good.
I'd wiretap that.
That's fitting for this episode.
"Your love is a virus I'd like to contract." "Are you a formication? Because you're getting under my skin."
What?
Formication.
Formication?
Yeah.
What the fuck's a formication?
a fornication. I don't know. Do I need to Google fornication?
I don't know. That one doesn't make sense to me.
Does it work in my brain?
Formication is the sensation of having insects crawling on or under your skin.
Oh.
Fucking creepy.
That is creepy.
Are you tired? Because you've been following me all day. What the fuck?
Don't flirt with the stalkers, okay? It's not worth it.
Baby, you are so fine. I want to kidnap and smuggle you to my private villa.
Damn.
Be my Valentine, and we can do it execution style. I like that one.
That's good.
Could you help me find my crowbar?
I expected there to be more.
No, that's it.
Alright, so that's our randomness for the ending. Congratulations to making it to the end of this long-ass episode. And I say long-ass because before editing, it's 2 hours and 40 minutes long. So, good job, guys. I wonder how short that I'll make it. We'll see. Anyway.
We like them big.
Like
them not chunky. Short.
Hey. Don't talk about me like that.
You are fun-sized.
I am fun-sized. I'm pocket-sized. You could just fit me right in your pocket. And not your prison pocket.
not the prison pocket.
God. You're mocking. What have you done to me? Anyway, so you can find us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook.
You can also contact us through email at m3truecrimepod@gmail.com.
Job. Mm-hmm.
We also have the link tree.
And there you can request a case, send us a spooky story, or give us a fun fact, because we need some good fun facts.
Send us some pickup lines, too, like those, too.
Yes.
Send us anything, just not dick pics.
Yeah.
Are you happy to see me? Or is that just a guillotine dick in your pocket?
Guillotine that dick!